a couple weeks ago, I was listening to this really interesting podcast. I was listening to the TED Radio Hour. If you've never listened, you should. I mean, it's so interesting. You're probably familiar with TED Talks, these speeches that are given all around the world on a variety of very interesting, pertinent topics. And the TED Talk or the TED Radio Hour simply dives down deeper into some of those speeches and meets the guest who presented them, and it's such an interesting thing. But I was listening to this one, and they were interviewing this gentleman. His name is Daniel Quercia. He's originally from Europe, lived primarily in London, and he's an engineer, and he's a computer scientist by profession. And his specialty is trying to harness the capacity or the capabilities of computers to help with everyday life in the lives of you and I. And he also is an avid bicyclist. Now, if you're familiar with Europe, Europe is much more accommodating to travel by bicycles. There's bike lanes, and cities are more prepared for people who are using their bikes to get back and forth. So he has the opportunity to move from London to Boston, where he was going to join the staff of MIT. And so he moves to Boston, and as an avid cyclist, he's committed that he's going to ride his bike to and from work every day. So just like anybody would do, he pulled out his cell phone, pulled up a map app, put in where he was starting and where his office would be, and the app presented him an option of the best route to get to work. And so he just gets on his bike, and he starts his way to work. What he didn't know about this brand new city that he was living in, that the app took him down what's called Massachusetts Avenue, which is like in the center of Boston. It's one of the most, one of the busiest thoroughfares of morning traffic. And so he finds himself without a bike lane, navigating thousands and thousands of automobiles, hundreds and hundreds of people in the pedestrian crosswalks. He notices that the traffic lights are timed for vehicles and not for bicycles. And he gets to work, and he is a nervous wreck because of all that he's had to kind of navigate just to get to work. He's completely stressed out. He's just covered in exhaust fumes, and he's felt like he's just taken his life in his hands. And he does this for a month, 4 miserable weeks. And then he finally decides he's had enough. And so he just charts his own course. He knows enough now of like where he's going in the city that he just takes some back roads and some alleys and some different streets. And he gets to work, and it's only taken him maybe a few extra minutes over the time that he had from the original route. Does that make sense? But he notices a couple of things. First of all, he notices that he's in a completely different frame of mind. He's much more calm. He's much more relaxed because he hadn't taken his life in his own hands just to get to work. He'd noticed that he had been on streets with no vehicles. He had been on streets that were lined with trees, and they were beautiful. And he saw flowers that were sitting on the doorsteps to people's homes. He saw interesting shops and beautiful architecture. But his favorite thing that he noticed was that he could actually connect with other people that he passed on the way, like other bicyclists or people walking on the sidewalk. He actually had time to look at them, acknowledge them, maybe give them a nod or a morning hello or a wave. And it just put him in a much better frame of mind to start his day. And he started thinking about it, and he realized, oh, now I get it. You see, he's an engineer, and he recognizes that engineers design the map app. And engineers, by nature, tend to find the most efficient route between A and B. But the most efficient route isn't necessarily the most enjoyable route. So he starts thinking about this and the possibility of designing a different kind of map app. Now, at this point, he's moved from Boston back to London. He's working for another company and another team of scientists. And so they start doing this study of how to create a map app that wasn't necessarily built on efficiency, but was built more on enjoyment. And so they developed this thing called Happy Maps. Now, my research that I've done, it sounds like it's only available for the city of London. It's not international at this point. So don't go looking for it. So here's what they did. Here's what I thought was most interesting about what they did, is they used the power of what's called crowdsourcing. They were able to get thousands and thousands and thousands of people connected, and then what they did is they would send all of these people pairs of pictures, two urban scenes side by side, and they would ask everybody to make a vote. Of the two pictures that you're looking at, which one is the most pleasing, the most delightful, or the most happy to you? Which one connects with you better? And so after thousands and thousands and thousands of photographs, and after thousands and thousands and thousands of votes, they were able to put all this data together and start to see patterns to how people were choosing what picture was most pleasing. And then they just geotagged every picture because it had a location in the city of London. And pretty soon, they just connected all of the pictures and they developed the app so that you had a choice. You could take the most efficient route, the quickest route between A and B, or you could select the most enjoyable route. And based on these pictures, they were able to determine what one would be most pleasing to the most number of people. Isn't that fascinating? And just to show you how my crazy brain works, I thought to myself, I wonder how that works for church. So you know what we're going to do today? We're going to do a little science experiment. And we're going to do some crowdsourcing. And you're the crowd. Now, here's what's really different about what Daniel Quercia did and what I'm about to do is Daniel Quercia, all of the people who were voting were anonymous to each other because they were just connected through the internet. They had no idea what other people were voting. That's not going to be true here because I'm going to ask you to raise your hands. Now, here's what I need you to do. Just be honest. Okay? There's nothing about these pictures that's going to put you in an awkward position. Don't look around to see which one has the most hands up. You just vote. Of the two pictures, I'm going to show you five sets of pictures. Of the two pictures in each set, just vote the one that's most appealing to you, the most positive for you, the most interesting, or most pleasing. Does that make sense? We can do this, right? Right here at Cibolo Creek Community Church, we're going to do a science experiment. All right, so here's the first picture. First picture. Now, just look at it. It looks like a young lady sitting perhaps in a classroom or some kind of a seminar. There's some kind of a presenter. We'll just call this lecture. In contrast to this picture, this looks like some kind of a work group or work team. They've got some kind of a project they're addressing, and it looks like all of them are somehow contributing to the discussion. They're collaborating together about what to do, perhaps with a particular problem. Get it? Okay, so of these two pictures, I want you to raise your hand about the one that's most appealing or positive or attractive to you. So how many of you would say, I loved sitting in a lecture? Okay, good, good. How many say, no, I love the collaboration of a group of people discussing something? Okay, so I'm not really good at math, but it looks like the most popular picture was this one, that there's a greater interest in like a group collaborative discussion than a lecture. Okay, next contrast. Okay, we don't know what's going on here, but she looks pretty serious. So we're just going to call this serious, all right? And then we got this. This looks a little more fun, a little bit more playful. So of the two, which one's most appealing to you? How many of you like this picture? Find this appealing. Really? That's interesting. No, seriously, that's interesting to me. I'd love to talk with you about why you think that's interesting. Okay, and then how many of you go, no, this is a little bit more appealing to me? Okay, again, just from simple math, I'm going to say that that one's the most popular. Okay, next picture. Okay, looks like a very crowded street in some big city, very congested, people in your space bumping up against people that you don't know. People, we'll just leave it at that, okay? And then there's this picture, something a little bit more scenic, something a little bit more comfortable, relaxed, some people sitting on perhaps the quad at a university, just hanging out with some friends. So of the two, which one's most appealing to you? Is it this one? Anybody? Okay. It must be all the introverts. Like, I can hide in a crowd. Nobody, all right? And then how many of you would say this one's more appealing? Okay. All right, next pictures. Okay, it looks like a bus stop or perhaps a subway stop, inner city perhaps, and we got people sitting who are essentially strangers to each other. Nobody visiting with one another. Got somebody looking at their cell phone, kind of surprised that they're not all looking at their cell phone, all right? And then there's this picture. It just looks like some friends hanging out on a hike up in the mountains somewhere, maybe California. So the first one we're going to refer to as strangers. How many of you find this one most appealing? Okay, got one vote. Thank you for the courage. Geneva, you're awesome, all right? How many of you find this more appealing? Outdoors, hanging out with friends, hiking. Okay, I think this is our last one. Last step. Okay, this is a church service. Lots of people sitting together. This looks a little bit like the first service during the music, okay? All right, so this is a church service. And then this one is a group of people, perhaps in a restaurant or somebody's backyard, just hanging out together, having a meal. So of the two, now this is going to be tricky. Be honest, all right? Don't do the Jesus thing, all right? Just be honest. Of the two, how many of you prefer this? How many of you prefer this? Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? So think about it. Why is it that the most number of people, and I think if you did this in other audiences around the world, why is it that most people preferred a group discussion over a lecture, something fun or funny over serious, something of a group of people hanging out together having a good time rather than being in a crowd, people sitting down together and having a meal, even more than church? Why? Would you like to know what I think? Could it possibly be? Are you listening? Could it possibly be that that's how God has wired us? Crazy, I know. Could it be that that's how God has wired us? That He'd wire us more for collaborative discussions with other people? He's wired us to enjoy and have fun rather than be serious all the time. Maybe He's wired us to be in smaller groups of comfortable relationships than in great big crowds of people where nobody knows that we exist. Maybe, just maybe, listen, I know this is kind of crazy. Maybe He wired us to better enjoy sitting down at a table having dinner with someone than even going to church and sitting in rows and staring at the back of somebody's head for an hour. And so if that's true, that that's how God has wired us, then I have a really hard time believing that God would have created a church that was the opposite of all of that. He's too purposeful, he's too intentional, he's too smart to have created a design called the church where it'd be about a lecture, or large groups of people who don't know each other, or that's more serious than fun. I just don't think that that's how God would think, or that's what He would do. Are you tracking with me? Okay, I'm about to say something that's going to be hard for some of us. It might make some of you uncomfortable, might even make some of you mad. But just give me a little grace, okay? Before you go writing letters to the elders, just let me explain myself. I believe this. In fact, I'm coming to believe this now more than I ever have in my life. That perhaps, the most important value to belonging to a church is just to make friends. That the most or greatest value to being a part of a church is to make friends. Not learn everything there is to know about the Bible. Now, I'm not saying that's not important. And any of you who've been a part of Cibolo Creek for any length of time, you know that I'm deeply committed to you and I knowing the scriptures as well as we possibly can. But I might suggest that the greatest value of being a part of a church is having friends. And let me just try to explain why I think that's true. Will you give me a few minutes? Okay, so look at this very pivotal incident in the life of Jesus. One of them, an expert in the law, tested Jesus with the question, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Of the entire Old Testament, what's the most important instruction?" And Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all of your mind. This is the first, and this is the greatest commandment." And then Jesus continues. Now, if we were asking him what's the greatest commandment, he should have stopped right there. But he says, and the second is like it, meaning it's just as great. It's just as important. I can't separate the two. The second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then he says, the entire law and prophets, this is everything that you'll ever encounter in the Old Testament, all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. It's all about loving God, and it's all about loving others. So here's Jesus put on the spot saying, what is the most important instruction that you'd ever want people to understand? And he doesn't say, know everything about your Bible. He doesn't say, know everything about theology. He doesn't say, go to church every possible Sunday that the doors are open. He doesn't say, sing lots and lots of songs of worship. He says, boy, if I just had to narrow it down, what I'd say is, it's all about relationships. A relationship with God and a relationship with people. And then it gets really interesting if you follow this instruction of Jesus throughout the rest of the New Testament. We see this in the book of Romans. The Apostle Paul says, the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you've heard of that one. You shall not murder, you've heard of that one. You shall not steal, you shall not covet, we're all familiar with that one. And whatever other command there may be, name them. Name as many as you can think of. They're all summed up in this one command, which would say or imply that this is the greater one, that you should love your neighbors yourself. And you say, wait a second, Paul, the apostle. What about love God? No, he says, no, they're all summed up in this one great commandment. Love your neighbors yourself. Later, in his letter to the Galatians, he says this, serve one another humbly in love, for the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one commandment, or one command, love your neighbor as yourself. So we see over and over again from the words of Jesus to the instructions of the early apostles, it looks like the greatest priority of an expression for Christ followers is that we love each other. Does that make sense? Okay, here's some other interesting statements we find in the scriptures. Mark chapter 7, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. Now, these were people that they knew their Bible. They knew the scriptures. They didn't have a Bible like we had it at the time. They had the Old Testament and a series of manuscripts and a collection of other letters, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they ask Jesus, hey, why don't your disciples live according to the traditions or the instructions of the Old Testament scriptures according to the elders instead of eating their food with defiled hands? Now, this is a big thing. The Jews had this practice where they'd very religiously wash their hands before they'd eat food. It was an act of holiness, of cleansing themselves from any impurity. In fact, you know what it was about? Is that if a Jew happened to in any way contact a Gentile, like in the marketplace, their hands touched, the Jews thought themselves to be defiled. Not a very loving your neighbor kind of thing, is it? Okay? And so the Pharisees are all put out because Jesus' disciples, they didn't wash their hands before they ate. And here's Jesus' response. He replied, you know, Isaiah was right. He's hearkening back to their Old Testament scriptures. Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. Ooh, how to win friends and influence people. When he prophesied about you hypocrites, it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are so far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. They know all the I's to dot and T's to cross. They know when to stand up and sit down. They know the words to all the songs. They know how to bow their head and pray. They know what to do. But in all of that, getting good at those things, you have let go of the commands of God. And you're holding on to human tradition. In other words, you're missing the entire point. You've gotten really, really good at the religious thing, but you're not any good at the thing that really matters. And according to Jesus, that is relationship, a relationship with God and a relationship with people. And it's possible, I'm just throwing this out as a possibility, that all of our ritual and all of our routine and all of our formalities of worship have gotten in the way of the one thing that Jesus asks the most of us. That what we've done with church in the 21st century perhaps doesn't look anything like the heart of God and the desires of Jesus when he thought about a community of Christ followers gathering together. We see this all through the Gospels. Jesus versus the Pharisees, particularly around this discussion of the Sabbath. You see, the Pharisees, they were the Marines, the moral Marines of their day, and they were all about doing what the Bible said, doing what the law said, and you never, ever strayed away from it. And then Jesus, he starts doing things on the Sabbath, like that day that they considered to be holy and a day of rest, and you couldn't do any work of any kind. And here's Jesus, like, eating food from the fields. And here's Jesus healing a person on the Sabbath. And he talks about somebody helping his neighbor get his oxen out of a hole if it's fallen into it. And the Pharisees, you know, you can't do that because that's illegal on the Sabbath. And Jesus goes, it isn't. You see, the Sabbath was created for God to be able to have his best things prized. If you're not helping your neighbor get his oxen out of a hole, I don't care that you're in the synagogue and worshiping me with everything that you know to do because you're not loving your neighbor. So we read this in the book of 1 Corinthians. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, I don't even know what that means, but it sounds pretty impressive, right? But do not have love? I'm just a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. In other words, I'm just making a lot of noise. If I have the gift of prophecy and, boy, I can fathom all mysteries and I have all knowledge and I have faith, I have so much faith that I could move mountains, but if I don't have love, I'm nothing. I have no value. I offer nothing of consequence. If I give all that I possess to the poor and I give over my body to hardship, that sounds so heroic, but I don't have love, there's nothing in it for me. There's nothing in it for God. There's nothing in it for others. And so Paul concludes that conversation like this. Now, these three things remain. There's faith, there's hope, and there's love. But the greatest of these is always going to be what? It's going to be love. Now, if we want, we could sort of pull it apart and say, faith is a lot about what you know. Because in knowing, you trust. And hope may be a lot about what you know, these promises that God's made that you anticipate to come true in the future as God fulfills his promises to us and we put our hope in it. And Paul, the apostle, saying, yes, these three things are important, but they'll always be the priority for love. Are you tracking with me? Okay, so listen. What if the most noble expression of worshiping God is loving people? What if the most noble expression of worship isn't coming into a room like this and sitting in rows and singing songs and bowing heads and listening to someone go on and on about? Maybe that's, I'm not saying that's not worship, and I'm not saying that's not valuable, but maybe it's not the most noble expression of worship. Maybe God would rather say, would you just love people well? Would you just do that for me? I appreciate you showing up every Sunday, but man, if you're doing that, and you got it down, and you're really good at it, but you're not loving others, just suspend the formalities and get good at that. Here's a question. It just begs to be asked. Have we really learned the scriptures just by sitting in a seat and hearing an explanation of it? Or have we learned the scriptures when we take what we heard and we practice it in how we treat other people? Did you get that? That the honest truth of how much we know about Scripture and the honest truth of how much we know about theology and the honest truth about how much we can mix it up with other people about what we know about the Bible is ultimately decided by how well we treat one another. So it's interesting to me how many times in the Scriptures you meet people in relationship. So much of the Scriptures is built on teams. Adam and Eve. Like when God creates Adam, he goes, something's missing here. This isn't right. It's not good for a person to do life what? Alone, isolated, all by themselves. So he creates Eve. And then we got like these teams, Moses and Joshua, Ruth and Naomi, David and Jonathan, Jesus, of all people, God come to earth. He sees the value of surrounding himself with some other people to be in relationship with, Mary and Martha, Aquila and Priscilla, Peter and John, Paul and Barnabas, and we could go on and on, all these teams of people that we see throughout the Scriptures. Why? Because I think God is demonstrating to us the importance of being in relationship. Okay, if I haven't made my point yet, I'm not done. Look at this. Acts chapter 2, like the very first portrait that we have of the church. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. They did. They listened to the scriptures being taught. They listened to what the apostles learned from Jesus being taught. But look at this. And. It's not but. And to what? This relational connection that they shared with one another, the fellowship. To the breaking of bread, which our best understanding is that is them in fellowship getting together and having meals with one another. And they devoted themselves to prayer. And everyone was filled with awe at the wonders and signs that were performed by the apostles. And all the believers were what? Together. I'm sorry, what? Together and had everything in common. It got crazy. They were selling property and possessions to give to anyone who had a need. And every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread, had meals in their homes, and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts. You know what that means? Is they're like, this is awesome. I love going to church here because we do a lot of stuff together. Or maybe they were Baptists and they just liked the idea that they were always eating together. They ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying what? The favor of all the people. In other words, it was a very positive kind of thing in their community. It was so positive that the Lord was adding to their number daily those who were being impacted by it. The people on the outside were looking at a depth of togetherness that was so compelling. They were saying, I don't know what those people have, but I want to be a part of that. It seems like in the earliest church, they understood the value of loving each other and that it was just as important as loving God and loving scriptures and loving prayer and loving music. We have to love each other. That's such an essential expression of what it means to be a Christian and what it means to be a church. So later in the New Testament, the writer of Hebrews says this, let us, like all of us, like as a community, as a group, let us consider how we can spur one another on, like how we can help each other stay encouraged and motivated to do the things that Christ has asked us to do love, to love others and to do good things for them, not giving up meeting, there it is again, together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let our expression be that of encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. As time runs out, it's all that more imperative that Christians get the together thing. You with me? That makes sense? So I want to talk, just in a few minutes that we have left, I want to talk a little bit about friendships and relationships and how we get connected to each other. Do you know every relationship that you have started somewhere for some reason? And just think about it, the places where you've created friendships. Your first circle of friendships is your family, or hopefully. You think about the friends that you knew in the neighborhood that you grew up in. Mike Caton, Randy Munson, Brett Arnone, David Yeager. Those are the kids I grew up, ride bikes and played baseball and war. Did you ever play war? We used to have rock fights. Threw rocks at each other. Randy Munson's grandmother lived right next to the big field where we all played football and played. And eventually we'd all go into his grandmother's house for halftime and she'd feed us sugar bread. White bread with butter and sugar on it. How good is that? You meet friends at school. Some of your best friends come out of your years at college. You make friendships through your office. I love talking to folks in our congregation who've been a part of the military, and some of their dearest, best friends in life they met through their service in the military, and they continue to be dear friends to this day. All these reunions that these military men and women have together, I just love that because it just demonstrates the power of such great friendships. The people that you meet together in your community or some organization that you've been a part of or you're connected through a shared interest of a hobby or life experience. Like you went through a divorce and you met some other people who went through divorce, or you lost a child and you met some other people who lost a child, or these are the ways that friendships form, and so it should make sense to us. It should make sense to us that church ought to be one of the friendship-rich environments of our life. I'll even go this far, that for Christ followers, some of our very best friends in life ought to be people that we go to church with. Not our only friends in life, but some of our best ones. I think there's a reason why the scriptures repeatedly refer to the church as a family. Brothers and sisters connected to one another by our shared faith in Jesus Christ as our Heavenly Father. So I'm going to ask you a question. Don't raise your hand, don't answer out loud. Is that how you experience Cibolo Creek right now? Does it feel like family? Are some of your very best friends in life connected to you through this church? Can you honestly look around and say, they're like a brother, she's like a sister to me? The Apostle Paul writes this, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people. But watch this, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. We're supposed to do good to everybody, but especially to those who belong to our church. Now, I've decided there's three things that it takes in order to have good friendships, or to get started on friendships. You ready? Here they are. Risk, transparency, and frequency. Anytime you're new to any situation, you're new to a school, you're new to an office, you're new to a community, you're new to a street in a neighborhood, you're new to a church, there's going to be a certain amount of risk involved in you getting started meeting some other people. In other words, you know what that means? You're going to have to step outside of your comfort zone. And you just have to prepare yourself. You'll probably do something stupid and say something dumb and do something embarrassing, because that's just the way it is. But man, of all places, the church ought to be the best place to do stuff like that, because there's grace. But people who continue to come to our church week after week, after month, after year, and still remain kind of all siloed all by themselves because, well, they're afraid, somewhere I'm just going to have to ask you, you're going to have to take a risk. You're going to have to step out. You have to do something maybe you don't enjoy doing or like doing or feel comfortable doing. But you know what? All of us have to do that. All of us have to take some risk. And there's got to be a certain amount of transparency. Like, little by little, we just got to open up the truth about who we are. Quit the pretending. Take off the mask. Quit hiding behind the hairstyles and the makeup and the clothes and the houses and the cars and just be who we are. Invite some other people into the reality of who we are, because all of us, we all got our junk. But I'll tell you, the best friends in life are the people who know that about you and still love you for it. I've learned that transparency has to be doled out in small doses at a time. You can't just show up and start vomiting out all the truth about your life. Right? Just little by little, you tell somebody, a couple of people, you don't have to tell the entire congregation, just little by little, a few people get to know more and more about the truth about you. And then frequency. If you only take the risk and offer a little bit of transparency like once a year, don't expect the friendship to thrive. Well, I tried it once and I felt stupid and they said something that hurt my feelings. So I'm done. I tried it in May of last year. No, that was 2 years ago. You gotta do this enough to where it gets more comfortable and trusting. And does this make sense? So I'm almost done, promise. I'm almost done. So here at Cibolo Creek, I'm not talking about First Baptist of Bernie or or Oak Hills, however they do it, I'm sure they're doing it well. I'm just talking about our church right now. Here at Cibolo Creek, the absolute best way to feel like you're a part of this church family is to connect relationally. If your experience is simply showing up at a service once a week, it's never going to suffice. It's never going to be enough, I promise you. You can come here for 15 years, and if all you do is attend a service, you'll never, ever feel like this is your family. You have to connect relationally through things like electives, learning opportunities, community groups, serving teams, the other people that you'll volunteer alongside of, and different social experiences that Cibolo Creek offers from time to time, all for the purpose of trying to get people introduced to each other, to take a little risk and open the door a little bit more about who they are and do it enough times to where you start finding friends. Because otherwise, it's just a lonely place. And in the words of God, it's not good for anybody to do life alone. So, we're going to ask you this question. What's your next step? Don't think about the person across the aisle. Don't think about your spouse. I'm asking all of us, what's your next step? What's your next step to make a move to be better connected relationally around Cibolo Creek Community Church? You might have to step outside of your comfort zone, and you might have to take off the mask and open up a little bit about the truth of what's going on in your life, and you might have to do it more than once, but what's your next step? What are you going to do in 2018 to becoming a part of a family called Cibolo Creek Community Church? Can I offer a suggestion? So we have this idea. We have lots of ideas at Cibolo. Some of them work great. Some of them fail miserably. But just because they fail miserably doesn't mean we shouldn't try them. So we're going to try something new. Would you be interested? It's called Lunch Together. Now it's just a way. I'm not saying it's the way. It's a way to us to put into practice what we've learned here this morning. Lunch together. Now, how hard is lunch? Here's what we're inviting everybody who wants to get together for lunch next Sunday, January the 28th. That's not supposed to be there yet. January 28th. We're all going to meet together at Longhorn Cafe in Burney, not the one in Leon Springs. You'll be lonely there. Come to the one in Burney, okay? And we're just asking you, come have lunch. Just have lunch. Now, we've contacted the restaurant. They know we're coming. They know that we might have lots of people there, so they're getting geared up for that. But I want to just say a couple things. The restaurant is not our church. So what does that mean is, I don't know. It might take you a while to order your food. It might take you a while to get your food. You might not even like your food once you get it. I don't know, but that's not our fault. So if you don't like the burger and fries, don't get mad at us, okay? Now, we happen to think that's a great selection. Why does that keep happening? We think that's a great selection. They have a room that accommodate a lot of us. It won't accommodate all of us, but we can use the whole restaurant. Seriously. So let's just go ahead and get this. Well, I don't know anybody who will be there. Exactly. That's the point. So you're going to have to take a risk. You're going to have to show up and try. Does that make sense? The whole point of the endeavor is to help all of us who don't know everybody to start getting to know each other better. Now, let me tell you a little bit of what it's not. This is not about your family having lunch together after church. If you get there, squirrel up at some table with just your four, it ain't working. Second, this is not about you and your closest friends having lunch together after church. This isn't about you getting on the arm of some people you already know at Cibolo Creek and like to run around with and do stuff. Say, hey, you want to get a table so we don't have to meet anybody new? No. See, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. There would be a clear violation of the spirit of Christ saying, love one another. So, this is all about us making room at our table for some people we've never met before and getting acquainted with them. Do you get that? In fact, if you leave there next Saturday and had lunch, but you didn't meet next Sunday, I'm sorry. Now I've confused the entire congregation. Next Sunday, and you leave there and you didn't meet anybody new, it didn't work. We missed the point. We didn't do it right. This is all about meeting some people you've never met before. And all of us will have to take some risk. You say, well, how will I even recognize who's from Cibolo Creek? Because we're not renting out the restaurant. There'll be other people there, and they'll probably look like us. And we'll look like them. So how do you tell us apart? Well, we've got three ways. All right? We're going to design some table tents. They're already in production. And we're going to put them on tables where we see Cibolo Creek folks sitting. So as you get your food, or you've ordered your food and now you just look around, oh, there's one of those table tents. That means that's fair game. Go and introduce yourself. There's going to be all kinds of Cibolo Creek t-shirts. There'll be red ones and green ones and gray ones and blue ones. There'll be people from our children's ministry and our student ministry and our small group ministry and our guest service ministry. And somewhere on the shirt it says Cibolo. That's a good clue that that's who you're looking for. All right? And then we're going to do something we don't do much at Cibolo. We're going to offer you name tags. Can I have an usher see this young lady? Name tags. So we're going to offer you name tags. You can put them on. That way, in that very uncomfortable moment while you're having your burger and fries with somebody you've just met and you blank on their name after they'd introduced you, can just do that quick thing where you look down and you can be reminded. Like, folks, we're trying to take all the guesswork out of it we can, remove as many obstacles as possible. And we're going to try it. We're going to try it every month in 2018. What do you think? Now, I have every reason to believe that Longhorn Cafe is going to love this idea. Because we could bring up to 500 people into their restaurant, which could create a fair share of chaos, of course. But I can't begin to tell you how excited I am to think what it could mean to our church. So that those of you who are right now sitting in this room and go, it doesn't feel like a family to me. I don't know another soul. Maybe it's your first Sunday. Maybe it's your third year. Here's a way that we're trying our best. Help make this feel like we're in it together. Make sense? You say, I don't do lunch. All right, then this Tuesday evening, show up and help root on some boys from a maximum security prison who need some fans. Okay? All kinds of different ways that we can do this and become a better church for it. Let me ask you to stand together. Let me pray for you. God, I love this church so much. I just love these people. I love the story that you're writing. The story that's been told for these 21 years of such deep, close friendships that have been formed, a family that's been built, and I'm just hoping and praying for another strong 21 years of it into the future. And God, you've been so kind to us. You've included so many new people, and there's so many new people that we all feel a little like strangers around here right now. It doesn't have to be that way. It's not what you had in mind. So God, I'm just asking that you'd be at work in our hearts and our minds. Help us to get over our insecurities and our fears and our bumps and bruises in the past where relationships didn't work or a church hurt our feelings or something didn't go like we'd always imagined it would. Just give us the courage. Try again. And the confidence that you have wired us to live our lives in the company of other people who we know as our friends. I ask you this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. All right, gang, we'll see you next Sunday.